African governments understand that Europe's hypocrisy around energy security and gas policy in particular is sort of a gas for me, but not for thee.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Jolt. It's the 10th of April, and I'm your host, Sam Morgan. Coming up later in the show, I'm going to be taking a look at how a proposed mega pipeline stretching all the way from Nigeria to Europe's border could impact both the buyers and the sellers of the gas that might be pumped through it one day. Stay tuned for more on that. First, though, here's your roundup of the big stories making headlines today. I hope you're listening to the show on the Foresight Climate and Energy app. It really improves the listening experience, provides you with all the info you need, and allows you to take the jolt with you on the go. Download it from wherever you normally get your apps. The European Union has launched a new inquest into state subsidies granted to China's wind sector. In what was a highly anticipated move by the European Commission's competition department, the inquiry follows hot on the heels of a similar probe launched against China's electric vehicle industry. Brussels will now investigate Chinese wind turbine operations in Bulgaria, France, Greece, Romania, and Spain. The basis for the inquest will be the EU's new foreign subsidies regulation, which was recently used to assess a Chinese train company's business dealings in Bulgaria. Here's how competition chief Margrethe Vestager described the wind turbine probe during a speech at Princeton University.
The investment that we put in our supply chain, the investigations that we run, or the tools that we have developed, they are not meant to constrain China's success. They are meant to restore fairness in our economic relations. Everyone is welcome to be successful. Everyone is welcome to trade with Europe, but they have to play by the rules.
Switzerland's climate policies violated human rights, according to one of Europe's top courts. The Court of Human Rights ruled yesterday that the government's failure to do more to combat climate change had violated the rights of its citizens. The legal action was lodged by a group of more than 2,000 older Swiss women, who successfully argued that they'd been put at greater risk of dying in heat waves. The ruling cannot be appealed, and may yet prompt the Swiss government to revise its current climate targets. At the same time, a similar case brought by 6 young Portuguese people against 32 European governments was, however, rejected. The court decided that prosecution across multiple jurisdictions was not justified. Colombia's capital city, Bogota, has announced water restrictions after climate-linked droughts caused reservoirs to drop to record low levels. Mayor Carlos Fernando Galan said that the city of 8 million people will be divided into 9 different sectors. One sector will be cut off from its water supply for 24 hours on a rotating basis in order to deal with the shortage and cut usage by 11%. The measures, which the authorities say are only temporary, will start on Thursday and last until water levels recover to a sufficient level. An explosion at an Italian hydropower station has left 4 people dead, while several are still missing. Details are scarce about the incident at the power plant near Bologna in northern Italy. However, news reports claim that a fire caused by a defective turbine is to blame. The integrity of the dam itself is not thought to have been damaged. The entire facility is 30 metres below the level of the artificial lake that feeds the plant, and rescue teams are having difficulties reaching the lower levels of the facility. Bologna's mayor said it is the worst workplace tragedy in Italy's recent history. The Energy Charter Treaty, a controversial investment protection agreement set up in the wake of the collapse of the Soviet Union, was dealt another serious blow yesterday. Members of the European Parliament's influential industry and trade committees voted in favour of the EU withdrawing from the pact. It has been branded a fossil dinosaur treaty and a danger to the energy transition by its critics, who warned that it allows energy majors to sue governments if their profits are affected by climate policies. A vote in the full parliament is scheduled for the end of April. If that passes as expected, then the EU Council of Governments will be able to adopt the decision. Check the show notes for a link to an episode of the Policy Dispatch, which goes into far more detail about why the treaty is so contentious. And finally, German car giant BMW has turned to Croatian firm Rimac to provide batteries for its next generation of high-performance electric cars. Rematz is best known for making a 1,800 brake horsepower electric hypercar, which is one of the fastest cars of any kind in the world. It even set the world record for fastest speed driven in reverse, 275 kilometers an hour. The firm is dedicating the majority of its plant near Zagreb to the new project, and although details are still slim, it is already being hailed as the biggest technology deal ever struck by a Croatian company. Company founder Mate Rimac said his business journey began when he bought a 1984 BMW and converted it into an electric car in his garage, and that this agreement with the Bavarian firm is a perfect piece of symmetry. That's it for your news updates. More next time. Now it's time for a closer look at the story of the moment. Nigeria continues to explore the possibility of an immense offshore gas pipeline that would run around the west coast of Africa all the way to Morocco. The main objective is to tap into the thirsty and lucrative European energy market. At well over 5,000 kilometers long, it would be one of the longest and most impressive pipeline projects in the world, passing through the territories of no less than 13 countries. Earlier this year, Nigeria's state-run energy company indicated that it would make an investment decision on the pipeline in 2024. Let's learn a bit more about the thinking behind this project and why it's significant for the energy transition. Nigeria is one of the world's biggest gas producers and harbours ambitions to break into the top 10 exporting countries. Getting its hydrocarbons to market is one of the biggest hurdles. In addition to the Africa-Atlantic offshore route, Nigeria's government is also looking into a trans-Saharan pipeline that would access Europe's gas consumers via Algeria. Both projects face immense challenges. To learn more about why Nigeria is even considering such immense infrastructure projects, I turn to Todd Moss, the Executive Director of the Energy for Growth Hub and a former Deputy Assistant US State Secretary for African Affairs.
Nigeria, you know, as a country wants to get its products to market. The Nigerian state oil company definitely wants to do that. They're trying to get their oil and gas into the international market and get income. And so the pipeline is obviously one way for them to help export gas. But the Nigerian politicians and the Nigerian population want more than just a trickle of income from their natural resources. They want to make sure that it helps to create local jobs. So Nigerian politicians will definitely want to ensure that any project, including a pipeline for exporting gas to Europe, doesn't just follow an old kind of colonial extractive model. That just won't fly anymore. They need local benefits beyond a trickle of income. And that means local infrastructure for things like electricity in order to create jobs.
European governments are probably licking their lips at the prospect of another significant gas supplier hooking itself up to its market. Energy security is still a massive concern, but it isn't just European energy security that's an issue here, as Todd explains.
Well, look, I think the size of such a complicated project like this shows how important energy security is to Europe. After the Russian invasion of Ukraine, everybody is thinking about European energy security. But it's not just Europe. Nigeria actually lives with a chronic energy crisis. That energy crisis is sometimes called energy poverty. And if you and I were going to start a business in Nigeria right now, one of the top issues we would have is, you know, where are we going to get electricity for our business? Because right now you just cannot get affordable, reliable power in Nigeria. You can't get that from the utility. You'd have to build it yourself. And this is a structural problem for a very large, very important, and very strategic country. You know, Nigeria is, within the next 20 years, Nigeria will have a larger population than the United States. And they have today less than 2% of the electricity capacity of the U.S. And, you know, the average Nigerian today uses less electricity than my family refrigerator uses. So there is a real chronic shortage of electricity in Nigeria that will have to be solved. And they're going to see big energy projects as a key component of that.
It goes without saying that Europe has an unfortunate track record of exploiting Africa for its own gains, without giving much back. Would this project be any different, or has the dynamic changed?
You know, unfortunately, you still do see a lot of the colonial mindset where everybody's worried about their own energy security. They're not thinking about their allies. And really, the individual companies are just trying to make their projects bankable. That's where the political alliances and the political partnerships have to come in. And there's also a big climate change angle here as well. No country puts climate change ahead of jobs, you know, not in the United States, not in the UK, not in Nigeria, not even in Germany. The Nigerian government, if they're going to be exporting gas to Europe, they're going to want to have a local benefit in terms of local industry and local job creation. The sort of other component to the climate change issue is that Nigerian emissions are absolutely tiny, right? They're less than half a ton per person right now. And Nigeria itself is literally a rounding error in global emissions. Nigeria, you know, again, a huge country, over 200 million people, going to be, in my lifetime, will be the third biggest country in the world. It's less than one third of 1% of global emissions. And part of that is because while Nigeria is producing gas, it actually uses very little of it at home. So today, Nigeria has less than 20 gas-fired power plants in the entire country. I'm sitting in Washington, D.C., and in the United States, we have over 1,000 gas-fired power plants here. For Nigerian governments, they fully understand that they need to use some of their natural gas for their domestic economy and to really grow the job market in their own country.
Unfortunately, we might find ourselves in a situation where money can definitely be found to help ship hydrocarbons out of Africa, but not for developing infrastructure so it can be used for domestic development.
Some of the rules around financing are kind of upside down. And African governments understand that Europe's hypocrisy around energy security and gas policy in particular is sort of a gas for me, but not for thee. Europe is happy for Nigeria to export gas to Europe because it helps Europe's energy security. But I can tell you, if Nigeria wants to build a power plant running on local gas or local industry that will use Nigeria's local gas, Europe will be crying climate change and try to block financing for those projects. And we see this very clearly at institutions like the World Bank or in the development finance institutions, which are set up explicitly to help poor countries build infrastructure, but they're not. But the rules are really not allowing countries to use gas for climate change reasons.
I asked Todd how we can change the situation so neocolonial energy politics do not become the established norm. Is building out more renewable energy part of the solution?
Part of it is that, you know, we've got silos, so the climate-concerned politicians have more influence on foreign finance than they do domestic decisions. But I think there's really two steps. One is we have to recognize that poor countries also have very strong energy security needs. And we cannot just have, you know, a two-tier global system where, you know, Europe is perfectly fine with private money funding gas to be exported to Europe, use African gas for Europe's energy security. We can't have that sitting side by side where Africans are not allowed to use African gas for themselves because, you know, wait, that's too dangerous for the world. It's upside down climate justice because the source of emissions are in the rich countries. It's not in the poor countries. So the first is just recognizing that this is a problem, both politically and ethically, and seeing that energy security matters to all countries. And the second is, you know, we can really just have sensible, flexible, climate-friendly rules that do allow countries to build gas where that makes the most sense, but still leans on the scale toward cleaner energy solutions. Here's the kicker, is that African economies are already far greener than the rich world. First of all, no one in Africa is planning on building a coal-powered future. Nobody, not even South Africa. And even for gas, they're thinking of gas largely as a backup to intermittent wind and solar, and, you know, in lots of countries, hydro plays a big role. There is no plausible scenario where Africa has a gas-dominated future. It's going to look a little bit more like a renewables-dominated future with gas as providing that reliability backup that will be good for development, good for national economies, and is not a problem for the climate, just because Africa's consumption, even in a fast growth scenario, is still going to be so low. Africa will remain a rounding error in global emissions.
What are your thoughts on this story? Should European governments pay for more than just gas imports to help their suppliers' development? Let us know down in the contribution section. Many thanks for joining us today. Sean will be back tomorrow with more on The Jolt. If you missed yesterday's episode or even want to listen to it again, I'd recommend that you download our app. It'll let you take all of our podcasts on the go. Download it wherever you normally get your apps. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes at Foresight for making The Jolt possible, and shout out to Mute Island for providing the theme music. Until next time, thanks for being a part of The Jolt.